Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Happy Friday to everyone, and I hope you all had a great weekend. As always, I hope you all have a better weekend to follow. Hey, Rex. Hey, Pam. How are you both tonight?
All right.
I'm doing good. Good to hear you both.
Good to hear you too, Pam. Yes. So it's Friday. We all have on our party hats. No, you don't.
Sure.
You fibber, you. So yeah, we had a Sharp on the line. Oh wait, there he is. He's back.
Yeah.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
Hello. How's
hey, Scott.
Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard.
I'm glad I could be on board.
Very cool. So listen, let's go down the line now. Pam, how are you today? You doing all right?
I am doing great. Had a fairly productive day. My daughter got the grill that our brand new grill put together. As I had mentioned earlier in LNP, I was attempting to help her, and I asked, how can I help? And at one point, she said, you can help by not talking. And I thought, I think I'll just go inside and talk to my poetry friends.
There you
because
go.
There you go. She's much better at putting stuff together than I am.
This is pretty interesting here in my life. The power just popped off in the back of the house again. So I'm going to carry on with the highs and how are yous, and I don't know. Well, I guess I'll have to figure it from there because I have nothing here except for my phone. So how are you, Rex? Everything good for you today?
I'm alive.
Yes? Well, that's always a plus. That's always a plus. And that's good to know. Yeah, how's your weather today? Hot? It's kind of sticky here. I didn't like it. And Scott, how are you today?
I am doing amazing. It's bloody
amazing
hot.
Amazing is
here.
Always wonderful. It's hot there? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's really hot here.
Yeah, I don't like really hot. I don't like that very much. But yeah, so I think I'm. Well, I don't know what I'm doing. Turning on the computer again. Someone felt merciful, I guess, and went out and flipped the switch. Not quite sure what's happening around here. It's the second time tonight. So I have a feeling it'll probably be happening again.
That is
so
odd.
Anyway.
You're not having any storms, are you?
You know what it is? It's an old house. It's an old house. And when it was built, the wiring wasn't set up for 9 million electronic appliances or things. So now, you know, with the wonderful world of everything gets plugged in, you know, my grandson's in there on his Xbox. He's got his phone charging. I got my phone on the charger. I got my computer on. I have an air conditioner on in this room. There's an air conditioner on in my son's room. So it's just a lot of draw in the back of the house. Like everybody in Radioland wants to hear that. But it's the truth. So all of a sudden somebody put something on that they didn't have on before, and it starts the circus is what it starts. So, let's see. I'll tell you what, Pam, I have two carryovers at the top of my board that have audios. One is Robert M., and the other one is Titus. Robert M. is one we ended the show with last week, but I felt like I gave it the bum's rush. And I think half of it played off of the radio. So if you would be so kind as maybe to put up Robert, and the audio is
absolutely
one without a title.
All right. I would be happy to. All right. Yep. All right, so we have Language Soul by Mr. M, and we have an audio for that. So, here we go.
This is my recital of Language Soul. As a child, I was defiled, surrounded by pain and death. Feeling exiled and reviled, I began to loathe every breath. Born of lust, masked distrust, emerging as a child of shame. Having to adjust to utter disgust in the place from where I came. Blood and booze seemed to ooze out of the poverty-ridden street. Gangs and crews with nothing to lose had assisted in my self-defeat. Seems every day they'd find a way to punish me for being unique. Cyclical decay led me astray, dwindling my desire to speak. Losing my friends to violent trends of the up-and-coming criminal. This man descends, sadness it rends, but I try to keep it minimal. Try as I might, the relentless plight eventually had driven me cold. No will to fight the perpetual blight and its frigid, oppressive hold. Time cannot heal the pain that I feel, the result of sorrow's corruption. Fate will reveal this tragic ordeal has led to my miserable destruction.
Great read, Mr. M. Thank you very much for the sound card. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
Sorry,
Pam?
I'm excited.
Oh, okay.
It definitely reminds me of the fears that they have for kids nowadays through COVID and all that kind of stuff, facing isolation and all kinds of fears of, you know, what kids are going through at this time. I really like the flow, the rhythm. I also love the way his voice sounded reading it. It to me added a real punch to the to the words, having such a bleak sound along with it. Quite honestly, overall, yeah, like I say, I think it was a really well done piece that pulls you into the sadness of the situation that's being discussed. So.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jean, how about you?
Well, if I said anything based on me listening to that tonight, it would be a lie. But I did comment on that piece last week. And Robert, as always, I think you did an excellent job with always awesome rhyme and flow in your work. And thanks for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Jean. All right, Pam, how about you? Pam?
Yes, I was. Yeah, wonderful rhyme and flow. I too really enjoy his audios that he makes, and it fits really well with the dark right. I like what Scott had to the observation about, you know, the concerns about children during COVID time being in isolation. And I hadn't really thought of it from that perspective, but I think it was a great observation. To me what really stands out is that this is a powerful and emotive write about a child who is not only goes through neglect and abuse at home, but goes through bullying at school. I really like this all the way through. But especially blood and booze seem to ooze out of the poverty-ridden streets. Gangs and crews with nothing to lose had assisted in my self-defeat. Seems every day they'd find a way to punish me for being unique. Cyclical decay led me astray, dwindling my desire to speak. You know, it's such a difficult thing when you don't feel like you fit in with family or at school. And you grow up in an environment of addiction, of drugs and booze. And so you tend to repeat as you grow what you see. And so just a really just hard-hitting write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And, yeah, you're right. Scott hit on something, too. This goes a lot deeper. I like the inner and outer rhyme for the every other line that helped add a little bit of, as Scott put it, punch to the piece itself. Born of lust, master's trust, emerging as a child of shame, having to adjust to utter disgust in the place from where I came. That points to already the understanding of where you come from, and you weren't really something planned on, so to speak. And it hits on the blood and the booze, poverty-ridden streets. You look in the inner cities, especially losing my friends to violent trends of the up-and-coming criminal. This man descends. Sadness, it rends. But I tried to keep it minimal. The idea of it, those streets, they bear hollowness because the idea of being drawn in or being on the outside, and that's kind of a strong draw. But then again, you watch as those streets eat up those around you. So from beginning to the middle of life, you've already experienced more than most people do in a whole lifetime. And that includes all the funerals that one gets to go to. And the back end of this hits on the thought of being corrupt from the moment of inception, so to speak. And the destruction is something that sits wholly within the mind and the soul itself, because you've managed to escape that angle, yes, it still lives within it. And that leads in and of itself to maybe a way of life moving forward that still walks on that path of hate, destruction, revileness, and just can't get away from it. So, great voice there, Mr. M. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're coming back your way. Gene?
I'm sorry. I muted my phone, not the studio. God help me. Okay, here we go again. Oh, my God. Pam, can I get you to read the next one for me, please? Oh, God.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
Perfume by E.J. Cool. The thick perfume of dank death swirls summer sweat and swarth coils. Every rank fermented breath, flaunting ripe and rotting in spoils. Clumps of spotted tawny fur, sticky with red confiture, and the odd entangled burr, nightshade of enchanter. A white-tailed fawn scant remains, picked to bone and strewn about, pumped back into black soil's veins, where from budding bluebells, pink primrose and ghost flower, prairie fire and germander, breathe a woodland specular, the sacraments of nature and poem.
Great read, Dan. Thank you very much. I like the thought of offering this up as perfume. There's a note to the ripe spoils of death and how everything runs back into the soil, so to speak. But without it, you wouldn't be able to enjoy all of those touches that she's driven into, the bluebells, the primrose, the ghost flowers, and everything else. So the idea of how one treats death in one respect, yeah, to look at it in another respect from nature's point of view, perfume is quite the notice to the thought of picked a bone and strewn about, pumped back into black soil veins, where from budding bluebell sprout. There's a nice, easy note to that which nature produces, nature also takes back in. So, nicely done, EJ. Thank you. All right, Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was an incredible piece. I started out by, perfume, and then we started talking about the thank death and all this. But then, you know, I kept reading on. I'm going, okay. It's an intriguing light, and it pulls you in to try and figure out what is actually going on. But I saw in the author's note, she said, enchanters, nightshade, bluebells, primrose, ghost flower, prairie fire, and germander are all wildflowers found in Ohio. So not only was it, you know, about the way that, you know, the death rejuvenates the soil, but it was kind of a tribute to the flowers, I guess, in her area. I assume that's where she's from. But what an intriguing way to put it down. It was, you know, one way it was just as dark as it was beautiful in the next. So wonderful job, EJ, and nice work. Much enjoyed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Gene. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I'll leave it to EJ to combine the beauty of nature and flowers and the smells of flowers with death, because she does an amazing job of combining those two things in this poem. It's really well done, and reminds me of a contest she had held about a bridge nearby her home. And then when you look, you know, there's a whole lot of greenery and stuff like that. So I imagine that EJ probably goes out walking and gets all kinds of motivation for these types of things near her home. So overall, it's a great poem that elicits feelings of the dying of this deer, along with its smell, and then also probably mixed with the beauty and the smell of nature. So, really well done, EJ.
Thank you, Scott. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yes, it was a wonderful poem to read. I did like the use of the one-word title of perfume and the opening line, thick perfume of dank death. The rhyme and meter were spot on. Really liked how visceral the imagery was. And, you know, I have to totally agree with both Scott and Jean. What really stood out to me with this, though, is that she made the dead animal a fawn rather than an older deer. The idea to remind us that, you know, death also comes to the young, that, you know, it doesn't always wait until a particular age. I also like the phrase at the end, sacraments of nature. And I think sacraments was a perfect word to describe, you know, the sacrifices that must be made, you know, in order to have life grow from death. So beautifully written. Very well done.
Thank you, everyone. All right, Jane, back to you.
Okey-dokey. Well, I'm going to kick this one back to you this time. So whenever you're ready, Rex, this is by Zach Compton.
All right.
There we go.
Well, I like the title. Inedible Zombies by Jack Tomkovic. Inedible, immutable zombies were banging on my door, reeking of necrosis, flesh hanging rich with gore. Inedible, inflatable zombies, how my mother swore she'd shoot their heads off, but missed again and again. Inedible, indigestible zombies ripped her flesh day by day. Inedible, inflatable zombies nibbled her eyeballs as canapes, rerouted her blocked-up septum, sent her stomach to Neptune, rearranged her hammer toes, and served her nose. Zombies in the kitchen, zombies in the hall, zombies crawling on the ceiling, zombies hanging from the wall, zombies drinking root beer, zombies eating Swiss cheese, zombies gnawing her left ear, zombies chewed the bee's knees. Hanging in the trees, rotting in the breeze, heels and toes, pickled pinkies, they chose, don't sneeze. Hard to chew, with a no-brain freeze. And pump. All right, Pam, you get the first lick at this.
All right, well, you know, definitely clever and fun, dark humor. I enjoyed reading, or I enjoyed listening to you read it, so, you know, very well done. I especially liked rerouted her blocked up septum, sent her stomach to Neptune, rearranged her hammer toes and served her nose froze. Zombies in the kitchen, zombies in the hall, zombies crawling on the ceiling, zombies hanging from the wall. It very much has a B-rated movie feel, like, you know, like some of the, one of those cheesy sci-fi, like 1950s, you know, B-rated movies that you know, it just, it has that whole just fun cult fiction feel to it. So very well done.
You mean like the original Night of the Living Dead? They're coming to get you, Susan.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I love the feel of it as well. You know, it started off kind of seeming like it might be a serious attempt at something here, but, you know, I guess the title should have told me otherwise. And, you know, I just love how it winds through. Not going to repeat the same lines that Pam did and everything, but, you know, I loved when it got down to those third and fourth to last stanzas where it's just zombies everywhere, basically. And then the rhyme and the feel that was created through the rhythm and the rhyme that Jack created in the poem. So, yeah, very good poem, and, you know, kind of had me smiling throughout.
Thank you, Scott. All right, Jean. Zombies.
Wow. Well, what a crazy piece that was. Just all over the place, zombies. I mean, you know, it was wasn't a pretty piece, that's for sure, but definitely intriguing and fun. So nice work, Jack, and thanks for sharing with us. And Pam, I have to ask you to drop the next one when the Wreck the Sun comes back. And that's going to be Scott's piece.
Well,
what's that?
Thank you.
Oh, never mind.
Thank you, Jean. Yeah, there's a lot of humor in this, but it's almost designed for something very specific in mind. You look at the inedible and then again, inflatable. So it's kind of a little maybe bombast and full of themselves note to that. And the thought, how my mother swore she'd shoot their heads off and missed again and again. And the fact that she's the one that got chewed up, so kind of hits on the idea of mother, not maybe the zombie is somebody as a reference point to another individual within this family setting that none of them really care for. So she becomes the zombie, the one that chews and spits everybody out, so to speak. And the idea that in the kitchen, in the hall, stealing on the wall, drinking root beer, Swiss cheese, gnawing on a left ear, and it gives you the idea of someone always chewing your ear off with whatever they've got to say because you're not important enough to speak. So it's hard to chew with a no-brain freeze, so it gives that idea. Yeah, kind of maybe we should give her a lot of ice cream, something to make her freeze in the moment, just to shut up for a little while. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay. Pam, if you would be so kind as to put Scott's piece into the room. And Scott, if you would be so kind. I'm sorry?
Oh, sorry. I didn't realize you weren't done.
Yeah, okay. Awesome.
All right. There's your poem, Scott. Go ahead and give it a read.
All right. I wrote this one for a contest relative to Lizzie Borden. So Lizzie Borden, chop, chop, off with your head. Quickly, I make kindling out of you, Mommy and Daddy. Only the fire awaits me now. Chop, chop, off with your legs. Can't run from me now, Daddy, or run from what you did. Chop, chop. Off with your arms. No hugs for the sharpened anvil. I put you to bed, and you didn't even give me a bloody kiss goodnight. Chop, chop. And boom.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got? Chop, chop.
I really... Well, this is an excellent dark brevity. I really like that you wrote about Lizzie Borden. Her birthday was actually just recently, like just within the last couple of days, because I was looking on Brainy Quotes for, you know, quotes, potential quotes as prompts for contests. And I happened to run across that it was her birthday. Which, you know, it's always interesting to me, a little tangent here, how somebody can become, and she's marked as a celebrity, how somebody can become a celebrity for being famous for possibly having killed their parents. And I say possibly because her sister was a suspect too. And even though most people believe Lizzie Borden did do it, there is some reasonable doubt within the circumstances that point to her sister. I like this all the way through, but I particularly like that you went with the chop chop like four different times in the poem to create that response of a, you know, hearing the sound, and it has that build up. Off with your heads was another good one because it took me to the whole, the Queen of Hearts, Alice in Wonderland, which I thought was a really nice touch. And of course, you know, there's a great dark twisted humor in, you know, and you didn't even give me a bloody kiss goodnight. So just wonderful dark brevity and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, chop chop, what you got?
Chop chop. Scott, I thought it was a great job, and as Pam said, it was an interesting fact that you wrote for Lizzie Borden. Always an intriguing topic. I just find that whole story kind of different. The chop chop, use of chop chop throughout was drove that whole, you know, happening, you know, forward. It was everyone, you know, because, you know, when you think of Lizzie Borden, automatically you think of that axe, and that chop chop just reinforces it, you know, throughout the poem. So I think you did a great job with that, and a really nice touch. So good night. Good night. Thanks for putting it on tonight. God, I'm getting frustrated. My life, God.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you.
I like the chop chop angle too, because it offers up two thoughts. The easy one being the literality of actually digging and chopping up the bodies, but the other one is the quick chop chop, hustle up, got to make it fast, which hits on the notion of actually making it done quickly. But also there's an inference that maybe that's how she was treated. So the chop chop angle coming back is me chopping with the axe as a double note to the flavor. But it also hits on the idea of that she literally did this, thought it out, made it up, made it perfectly set so that she could actually walk away, and did walk away, even though she might have done it. They didn't find her guilty. So that bite for the bloody kiss goodnight could offer up the essence of maybe there was a bit of abuse going on as well, and maybe that's why this needed to happen.
Thanks, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
All right. Again, Pam, if you would be so kind as to put Titus's piece up, he's up in the top cluster, if you don't mind. I'll be there eventually, I swear.
Oh, no problem.
Every fourth or fifth poem that seems to be my thing tonight. God.
Yeah, some nights are just like that. All right. All right. Up next, we have Judgment of Paris, Chant Royale by Titus Llewellyn, and we have a SoundCloud for that. So, here we go.
Judgment of Paris, Chant Royal. Location, Museo di Malaga. At the wedding of Peleus and Thetis, Vita and Adubita Calliste, to the fairest. You'll proceed to reason with a purpose, a richly goad far be worse than 'tis light-hearted, to conjugate, to seek attempt thus, refusing to purport some lurid insight, and yet loathe thyself as one voice, no less likelihood, for beauty be plentiful, I guess, you'll surely hope to befit Theria, exuent Eris, when one claims he doubt vanity would bring, Hermes to confide with news, misgivings each, takes away whose need he'd choose to pry, he'd find just one remaining to beseech, that hour has come to the gods of Olympus, should he so choosing who to forage insight. Love rest assures my hunger, frustrous, the instrumental gift of morning light. So Paris, how will it herd love's fairness? Beauty's charm, it is cherished, faultless, enamored by no means should pangs defy. She'll listen unperturbed, you think she'll reply.
close behind, presenting a partial speech. Where's Hera? Asked Zeus, obscuring a sigh. You'll find one's love remaining to beseech. How Athena's coy seems now flirtatious. Hides half amongst the throng by to light the search for a man who is not Iopas. Whose haunted shelter, frailsome, is uptight. Her skill shows wry. A courtship in recess. And wisdom questions why aught I confess. Her needs curtail behind that courtly sigh. You'll be in Hera's arms to adore the thigh I've forfeited to feeling. She's a peach. At war, uniquely a sweet or divine, I'll find that one remaining to beseech. Should Aphrodite leave conspicuous a naked prowl, her eyes they cower a sprite, she'll reign over men more adventurous. Best to suit the rest who would reignite. No flame from passion less. They are acquiesce, more thrill thereon, beholding slain from yes. She'll ask if none so judge her, none too shy, how women might expose themselves imply, if bold then Paris. Break the ice by each, two breasts his eyes hold firm on would untie, he'd find just one remaining to beseech. Not for the sake of winning, it seems cautious, judging himself first, of many politely led, it can be thoughtful, outright, clean alas, when hiding things of prowess are delighted. If behind evading blind death no less, refrains her barriers with affronts of breast, and generous in ways the showing thigh, anticipates her, shown as inspired by, openly shown what can become of reach. That longing holds the herd to heed too high, find just one remaining to beseech. By the account of acquaintance hereby betwixt that gather, as one makes a sigh of pleasure from the outcome, to besiege not two, then near to what is you and cry, he'd find just one remaining to beseech.
Wonderful read, Titus. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
I got a little background noise going on here. Can you go on to somebody else for a few minutes?
Sure. Pam?
Yeah, well, first of all, I didn't realize that Chant Royale, or Royal, however you pronounce it, is actually a specific form. So that's really cool. I always like looking at and delving into new forms. And it does seem to have a set kind of meter. I like the artwork that he wrote to. And let's see here. Let's see, all kinds of good lines, but I'm trying to find a favorite. Oh, that hour has come to the gods of Olympus, should he so choosing who to forge insight, love rest, assuage my hunger, Pisophorus, the instrumental gift of morning light. You know, this has definitely a really epic feel, and I like how it brings in the ancient Greece mythology and the idea of being presented with a choice. Not for the sake of winning, it seems cautious, judging himself first of many politely led. It can be thoughtful, outright, clean, alas, when hiding things of prowess are delighted. I really like the flow to this. I like his use of imagery. You know, to me, Titus always has a great way with language, very classical, very intelligent. I like the line, not for the sake of winning, it seems cautious. You know, but like the idea that, to me, it brings about the idea that you do your best in everything, not because you want to win, but because it says something about your character. You know, there's also a kind of a sensuality with this, and maybe in part because Aphrodite is brought up, and, you know, whenever you read about Aphrodite, you think sensuality, but, you know, should Aphrodite be conspicuous, a naked prowl, her eyes, they cower, a spite, she'll reign over men, more adventurous, best to suit the rest. Would reignite no flame from passionless acquiescence. To me, within those lines, Aphrodite represents the type of woman that's like playing with fire. Like, you know, you can't help but reach out and touch it, even though you know you're going to get burned. It's like, you know, being reaching out through the cage bars to pet a wild tiger, knowing you're going to get bitten, but that every tooth mark, you know, every point that you bleed at is worth it because you've tasted that bite of love and of lust. So just a absolutely wonderful use of imagery. I also like the phrase, she's a peach at war, uniquely sweet eau de vie, that idea of a woman who can be both, you know, sweet and, you know, and strong and violent at the same time, you know, all kinds of ups and downs. So, you know, wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Jean, how about you? She got on mute at first.
I'm good to go now, Rex.
Oh, okay, cool. Go ahead, Scott.
This is just an amazing ride. He definitely has like Cam said, an amazing classical feel to his writing. And, you know, it definitely takes some looking at it and thinking about it quite a bit, because he does not just use colloquial language by any stretch of the imagination through much of it. You know, I get the sense of the desire of love and, you know, the repetition of beseech at the end of each stanza and everything, you know, wanting something fervently. You know, and then throughout there's various references to different levels of undress in a woman, and, you know, just throughout it has just this very classy, sensual feel in many ways, but at the same time kind of this feel of disappointment at not being able to have it is sort of the feel I got from it. I feel I would have to read this poem a couple more times to really feel like I have a full grasp of it, though.
I get that. You're right. There is it is a deep thought. There's a piece of this up here near the top, the second stanza. He didn't read that. That's left for us. The chorus explains my youth between 17 and 21 years of age, failing at the romance to find a notable woman, said marrying a lost cause. I was indeed like one of these two courtiers, which was a nice touch. Then to get into the chorus, and the thought of those years, you get a guy like Paris. Everybody is drawn, all the women are drawn to him, and it's those notes of inferiority, and God, how do I compete with this when all the women, all the girls are fawning and flaunting themselves to him? And it kind of works that way. It works that way often. It's usually the big brawny footballers or the soccer players or the musicians, and all of a sudden everybody is dangling on them, and you're left kind of, Jesus, what the hell do I got to do? But it does walk along that very same path throughout. The idea of sometimes the best thing, even though you are hitting on that note, you want to beseech. That's the common cry in here. But yet in that beseeching, you kind of get lost the fact that there is one there that might be paying attention that you have overlooked in the matter because you're trying too hard. And I think that's the common angle he's sitting on, because he does note that he does marry, we refer to exhumed heiress, is now his wife. So maybe all comes to those one time is most prescient. And that's probably the offering within this piece itself. And Jean, are you there? Did we lose Jean, Pam?
Well, not on the board, but she may have had to step away with the whole, you know, the power keeping going out.
Oh, that's right. All right, then. Where would you like to go next?
All right. Well, let me take a look here and grab something, you know. So let's see here. I'm checking because we have a piece with a SoundCloud, but I'm, yes. Maybe I'll hold off on that, though. Actually, I think I'll get somebody to read. So, all right. Here we go. I found something. All right. We have The Sailor by Daniel Descino. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. The Sailor by Daniel Descino. Sunrise to the empty mind leaves no shadows, and nighttime is a room with no walls and all doors to leave me the choice of where the sunlight points, all directions as the snakes of tree limbs hiss in the breeze. And I cry and crawl, but only as a sailor left stranded till the ground becomes the ocean and my legs and thoughts are oars and sails, immune to weather and conducting the wind. Oh, what a glorious wind I have found, and for sharks I am too fast, and they teach me how to hunt, and for whales, and I am just white caps on the fading floating waves, but they teach me how to breathe. I do not know the way, I do not know the place, but it is there I am going to it. I see it always within my reach. So islands form beneath the sea, so I am told, but I do not know. I only stop to explore the shores, but surrounding there is always ocean. And prophets write the vapor trails, and the drums of war ring in concert halls, but I do not know any of this. I am just a watcher with a broken watch, whose hands of time have stopped, but they also move at infinite speed, but the hands still tell time. I look at them, I see what time it is, I stare at them, and I do not stop until I cannot see, for the sun has left me, the sun, which is my eyes, and what is left of me, the abyss. Blind darkness shelves the map of endless rivers. Islands have lost their meaning. I want to explore the endless waterways and forget the way back. And boom. All right, Pam, why don't you start?
All right. Well, first off, great read there, Rex. You know, I'm always a big fan of Daniel's poetry, as I feel it's got a very philosophical vibe to it. It's got a vibe of inward reflections, of self-reflection. I really like, and I cry and crawl, but only as a sailor left stranded to the ground becomes the ocean, and my legs and thoughts are oars and sails immune to weather and conducting the wind. To me, that really speaks on how we oftentimes need to adjust to our environment, you know, and while it can be taken literally, I think, to me, I take it as that metaphor. When you go through those time periods in life where there are sudden changes and you have to just suddenly get your sea legs, so to say, you know, and you have to adjust. I also really like, I do not know the way, I do not know the place, but it is there, I am going to it, I see it always within reach. I really feel that's a very cemented way of talking about faith. And I know cemented is a weird term, but, you know, it feels like it's talking about faith, but talking about faith in a way that's that's solid. You know, rather than saying, I know, you know, that there's some higher power out there, it's that kind of, I know that I have faith in my own intuition. And I am just a watcher with a broken watch whose hands of time have stopped, but they also move at infinite speed. I love the way that he oftentimes puts almost like mathematics and science into his right. So there's this great observation in the way that time is, you know, in this constant flux, and the potential how it has to be everything and nothing at once. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. Daniel often has very mythical feel to, you know, like this deeper sense of trying to understand the world around us and our purpose in it and all that stuff. I loved at the beginning the lines, sunrise to the empty mind leaves no shadows, you know, and I stuck there for a second as you kept reading onward thinking, that's a cool line. So then down, kind of touching on the idea of what you were talking about the religion and all of those things, the third to last stanza when he says, so islands form beneath the sea, so I am told, but I do not know. I only stop to explore the shores, but surrounding there's always ocean. To me, the ocean here is metaphorical for mystery. And you know, I kind of picture the island as, you know, the part that he's standing on is stable and everything and all that, but it's kind of like a iceberg where there's so much more below the surface that you just don't know than there, you know, is above the surface. And so I thought that stanza was really powerful as well. And it's another really well done poem by Daniel. He definitely makes you think a little through almost all of his poems. And so, yeah, just another one that has a lot of really good lines in it that kind of make you stop for a second and think. So good job, Daniel.
Oh, absolutely. The title of Sailing offers up its own note, but I too was drawn to that first line and what was in the near the end of that first stanza. So, to leave me the choice of where the sunlight points, all directions, as the snakes of tree limbs hiss in the breeze. So the thought with the of that the mind itself, and then he hits on a longer stanza right in the middle. And prophets write with vapor trails, and the drums of war ring in concert halls. But I do not know of any of this. I am just a watcher with a broken watch, whose hands of time have stopped. Now, in that, I am just a watcher, hits back against the sort of the prophet itself, or the writer, the one who actually notices things put down. But the hands still tell time. I look at them. I see what time it is. I stare at them, and I do not stop until I cannot see, but the sun has left me, the sun which is my eyes, and what has it left me? The abyss. So back again, the angle between light and dark, where he opens up with that, sunrise to the empty mind leaves no shadows, light and dark. And again, light and dark, and I think the island itself kind of represents his mind and the choice you have of either walking within the sunlight or leavening yourself within the shadows, so to speak. And then he offers to finish out, blind darkness shelters a map of endless rivers. So if you're going to walk within the darkness, then you are sheltered from that which you can actually run a true course with, thereby the sailor itself, and the sailor being the thought of mentality and how one can walk through something and actually notice something that nobody else does, hit on something tiny, and then offer it up as a glorious note to that which is, which I think he went there. All right, Gene, have you returned? Nope.
Well,
all right, Pam.
Time.
Okay.
Time. I'm trying to get my Look, if I started to tell you the stories, you wouldn't even believe me. But I'm just stepping into AP right now. Pam, I don't know what you're doing, so just go ahead and do it, you know? I mean, I'll be there. Promise.
Okay.
I know you did dance.
Right. So. Sounds good. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Yep, no problem. All right, up next we have A Dog's Pavane 3 by Jack Blue, and it goes like this. One day I was rhyming well with my Pixie's Poppy spell when my typewriter sighed and it had the cosmic tide. All my house began to roar, and I really saw it soar far beyond the endless blue and the clouds' fantastic zoo. I flew away to finally meet a little jazzy parakeet tapping like a queen of pop on the snowy mountaintop. Her macabre pirouette, like a ghost silhouette, brought a spooky jamboree all around the heavy sea. Just a whistle of the breeze startled me like braying trees. Driving my red-roofed plane, I just flew back on the lane with my busy typewriter tweeting in its theater, created by a parakeet tapping on the window seat, my garden shining green, still looking like a beam. We were touching down. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Scott, why don't we start with you? What do you think?
Like I said, I love that he pushes through this the whole way with the rhyming and everything as he starts off. And I'm trying to figure out, because I get the feel that he's flying here, but because driving my red roof plane, I just flew back on the lane with my busy typewriter tweeting in its theater created by a parakeet tapping on the window seat. So I assume in some way that there's like, but I mean, I'm not really sure if he's like on a laptop or something. We were touching down. Anyways, it's got a light feel to it all throughout, and kind of takes you through a variety of images. The clouds, fantastic zoo. So yeah, now as I'm like examining it a little closer, I assume he is flying, and that, you know, looking out the window as he's also trying to write a poem and those kinds of things. So overall, very good.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. Pam, what do you think?
All right, well, Scott, I put a message for you on LNP. I said, look in the AN, Scott. And I actually already knew this. These dog poems he does, this poem here is about Snoopy and Woodstock from the Peanuts. But I knew that even before looking in his AN, where you can see the Snoopy and Woodstock videos, because he had told me after I had commented on one of his dog Pavane poems. But yeah, like the typewriter, the flying house, it's all references to when Snoopy, you know, is pretending he's writing and then pretending he's the Red Baron or flying against the Red Baron. Yeah, right. I felt the same way the first time I commented on one of Jack's Dog Pavane poems, and I was trying to dig into the deep meaning of the poem, and I complimented the poem, and he told me in private message or on the response, thank you, Pam. You know, it's a poem about Snoopy and his flying doghouse. And all of a sudden I was like, it makes sense. And it really does. Like, if you think about it, like the reference to like the ghost silhouette, the dancing, you know, they're always dancing in the Peanuts specials, you know, Snoopy flying around, Snoopy pretending to write. But, you know, this is so much fun because what it is,
it makes sense, all of it.
Yes. You know, Woodstock was a parakeet. Yep. It all fits. But, you know, he does it in such a clever way. You know, he writes about a familiar character, but he does it with his own voice, his own vibe. You know, and it's so fun and it's so clever that you don't really need to get it to enjoy the poem, but it's really fun when you do get it, when it does click, or like in my case, when he just flat out tells you because it's not clicking. But, you know, so, yeah, just a wonderful use of imagery and great, delightful fun.
I totally see it. The red roof plane, the parakeet,
yep.
All of it, I see it now.
Absolutely. It does, that last stanza kind of sets the note to, yeah, I remember them cartoons. Snoopy always had a lot of fun thinking he was the Red Baron. So, yeah. And Tweety. Not Tweety. What was the bird's name?
Woodstock.
Yeah, hell of a turn. He was playing the Red Baron, but as a reference to the bird as being Woodstock. What a contrast in notes. World War One and 1969. All right, Pam, where are we going next?
All right. I am going to go ahead and let's see here. Here we go. All right. Up next, we have... All right. Nothing Shatters Like a Heart by JEG325. And Scott, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Nothing Shatters Like a Heart by JEG325. I threw my bottle at the wall after finishing a final drink, cloudy window, wet streaked above a tiny dish-filled sink. Clock ticks out slow minutes till the funeral dirge starts. My mother never warned me. Nothing shatters like a heart. No need to flip on any lights as the gloomy shadows walk. Gray ghosts of you lingering while our old memories talk. My bedroom walls closing in on this ship that's torn apart. Rainfall from eyes that know nothing shatters like a heart. End poem.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, you get first.
Well, yeah, this had a really nice flow to it. Scott, you did a great read. I did like that repetitive line, nothing shatters like a heart. And I like how he brought it up as, you know, words of wisdom from a grandmother. And you can imagine somebody struggling with the pain, struggling with the anger and the hurt. You know, and I think most of us have been at that point where we've been angry enough to, you know, want to throw something. And some of us have gone so far as to throw something, you know, against a wall. But, you know, it's sad, it's emotive, it's relatable, and I like how it has that almost down-home feeling to it because this person in their time of anger is remembering the words shared with them by their grandmother. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I like that. The repetition as well. I also really like the third stanza, no need to flip on any lights as the gloomy shadows walk, gray ghosts of you lingering while our old memories talk. So kind of given some personification to a few things within that, the shadows and the memories talking and stuff like that. And, you know, just overall, like you said, Pam, very relatable story that, you know, I'm sure many people could actually, you know, say, yeah, I can totally relate to this poem. So, which is, you know, I think what, to a large degree, you're aiming for in most poems. So, very good job, JEG325.
Oh, absolutely, Scott. Thank you. And I did like the fact that he didn't do a full rhyme, just opposite end, lines 2 and 4 for the whole piece, which kind of added a little bit more ease of flow. And he did say a range of emotions, too, the anger, the pain, the sadness, the love loss. So he does hit on a range of thought and emotions that can pick at everybody. Even with the thought, the funeral dirge starts, it doesn't have to relate to somebody actually dying. The thought of a funeral dirge starts could be the fact that the pain is finally set in with the notion of someone leaving you, so to speak. So this works on a number of levels as far as that goes. Nicely done, Jay. Thank you. All right, Pam.
All right.
You all missing me?
Ah, you back?
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid to say yes, but yes, I'm back. Yeah. Well, I go out there in the dark. I hit the button. I turn everything off in the whole house, and then I can't see a damn thing. Anyway, you don't want to know. It's insane. And then I couldn't get the Wi-Fi to boot back up. I'm like, what is going on here? So anyway.
Mm. So are you fused or unfused?
Am I who?
Fused or unfused?
Oh, I don't know what I am. I'm just nuts. Now, Pam, I know you did Dan DeShino's piece, and I know that you did Jag's piece, and
yes.
I know you did Jack Lee's piece. So that leaves me Arcana Amore and Mr. M at the top of the list, right? Everything
right.
above that is done. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And let me see now. Let me look. Okay. And Scott just read that. So that brings me to Pam, because that's just the way it works. So, Pam, I'm going to put this piece up for you.
All right.
Hi, Frank. Welcome to the party. There we go.
All right. Tipping Point by Sapphire Rose. There will transpire a time global warming will reach a tipping point. The world that is dying by the choices we have made. Humankind's selfish actions need to be rectified before it's too late. This land we have neglected, this land we hold dear, our need for power, our need for comfort, our planet's future unknown. If we continue to subsist beyond our planet's means, famine, animal extinction, and eventually the annihilation of humanity, just to mention a few, will become our new standard. It could be the beginning of the end of humanity and all species. No bounty to feed us, no drinkable water to replenish us, no children to carry on our way of life. Infertility will be the norm. Disease will rip apart society. In today's world, the above events are already playing out as I write them. We are powerless to stop it, or are we? We need to take a page from our early forefathers' handbook and so forth and embrace simple living, be one with nature, not against it. End poem.
Very great, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, since you're back in the room, how about a thought or two?
You know, I think that this was a really well-done piece by Sapphire Rose. A lot of great points were made. You know, if we continue to disregard the importance of taking care of the earth, taking care of the water, and taking care of the wildlife, you know, we will have hell to pay. And that's just inevitable. And some people believe it and some people don't. But I think that maybe we should err on the side of caution here, really. And just a well-done piece and a great great lesson in the last stanza. You know, we need to take a page from our early forefathers' handbook and go forth and embrace simple living. Be one with nature, not against it. So, great piece of advice at the end. Absolutely.
Nice. Be said, Gene. Thank you. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with Gene. You know, Sapphire just kind of gets right to it and doesn't try to flower this up much at all. Just kind of gets right to the, hey, you know, we're destroying our own future, and then lists out and gives some of the consequences of our actions and where we may be headed. And, again, in the end, offering up some sort of a solution that we all should embrace in some way, shape, or form, of the idea of being, you know, we're so all wrapped up in owning everything and consuming. We live in a society of nothing but consumption. And so, yeah, it's, you know, whether, like Gene said, whether somebody agrees completely with the idea of global warming or not, certainly some living within a reasonable means, I think, would always be in all of our best interest. So anyways, very good, poignant poem, Sapphire. And, yeah.
Nicely said, Scott. Thank you. All right, Pam, you got to read it?
Yep. It's beautifully written. It's thoughtful. You know, it's powerful. I really like this all the way through, but certain points that really stand out to it for me are the where she says, our need for power, our need for comfort. You know, I think so much of our greed is an offshoot of those needs, need to be above everybody else, the need to, you know, always feel comfort as in pampered, you know, not just basic needs met, but the idea of being pampered. I also really like that she delves into the thought of infertility. No children to carry our way of life, infertility will be the norm. You know, because, you know, there has been studies done on, you know, what affects women's fertility. And they'd oftentimes, you know, not, and I'm not saying all the time, but there can be environmental issues, circumstances, you know, that, and, you know, also the, you know, how much nutrients are available. Women who are getting less nutrients are more likely to struggle with getting pregnant. So that particular part really stood out to me because, you know, it's one of those, you know, people don't often bring up the fact that, you know, it's like, you know, we have to think about the future, you know, and the future means thinking about how are we going to carry babies to term. I also like that she capitalized all the letters of simple to make to emphasize. I don't know if that was to emphasize the word or if simple actually is an acronym for something. But I thought either way, it really grabs your attention and keeps it. And I like that, you know, she says that we should be one with nature and not against it. And it really, I think that's the way it should be with life. We should be one with each other, one with nature, you know, and kind of embrace that whole idea of that oneness. So a beautiful and thoughtful write and very well done.
Great comments, everybody. Dang with capitalizing simple with that notion of KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Making it easy. Yeah, that last great comment. That last stanza does kind of hit on the notion of simplicity, because you're right. Everybody's so wrapped up in this, that, and the other thing, they don't realize. You look at most people living in big cities today, got no idea what it takes to actually bring food to the table. Yet, when it appears in the grocery store, hey, it just appears there as if it's magic. No, it actually means you've got to work the land. You've got to take care of and milk the cows. You've got to take care of and pick the eggs from the hens. You've got to grow the vegetables and the other things that everybody else consumes. So cities actually think they're there for the big meme, of everything, but don't realize they subsist on the rest of the country itself, which is kind of a funky, because without the rest of the country, the big cities would die. Yes, they hold a lot when it comes to imperial thought and technology, but then again, they don't get out in the fields and do the work. So,
awesome comment.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Absolutely.
All right. We're coming back your way, Gene.
Okie dokie. Well, I'm going to toss this one out into the arena, and I'm going to play the SoundCloud that goes with it. This is To the Flame by Art Moore. So here we go.
Dancing the air midst waltzing wings, circling in frantic whirling ballets, dicing with death from a kiss of flames, flouting with fire in scorching pirouettes. The candle beckons its sizzling caress, enticing and inviting a flight to light. They flaunt the heat that burns so brightly in decaying spirals of kindled demise. This tragedy taunts the encroaching darkness of sullen sways performed with grace, teasing enchantments from magical pyres to always remain just beyond reach. Such brave endeavors to flirt with folly, repeated relentlessly throughout eternity, where minds perceive an attractive embrace, remiss of an orbit around radiant repose. A faltering flight must spell disaster, to plummet in blazing balls asunder. A final performance to nightly spectators who watch from shadows through unseen eyes. As the taper flickers its last dying breath, extinguished from sight in a gasp of smoke, bidding farewell to glows from fading embers, till radiance calls out from night once more.
Wonderful read, Arcana. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. Scott, what do you think?
I like the feel of him reading that. So, you know, then also I'm going to kind of go and do a Pam Ray thing here. You know, I think you could take this poem and apply it to what we were talking about in the last poem, or almost anything in the world where, you know, we're all a moth attracted to the flame, and the danger exists. And you know, so many different things. And so, you know, I just, as he was reading it and everything, which I thought he did a brilliant job of, you know, I just kept thinking this literally applies to virtually anything that's danger in life. So anyways, very good poem, Arcana.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. Pam?
Yeah, this is just absolutely beautiful. Wonderful. Oh, I'm checking something. Okay. All right. Wonderful use of imagery. I do like the lines and the candlelight beckons, the chiseling caress, enticing and inviting a flight to light. You know, he has this way of doing alliteration in a nice, gentle touch. I also really like such brave endeavors to flit with folly, repeated relentlessly through eternity, where minds perceive an attraction. Attractive embrace remains of an orbit around radiant repose. You know, we're always attracted to that which we shouldn't be attracted to. It kind of reminds me a bit of that quote that, what is it? Madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. That's what it feels like. It feels like that stanza particularly to me embraces the spirit of that quote, with the idea that we foolishly do the same things over and over again and expect at some point for there to be a different result, and there never is. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, this is a great piece. But I don't think I need to tell anybody that. But I'm going to say it anyway. I think it was just wonderful. I mean, you know, you go to that moth to a flame, you know, scenario, and he worded it in such a way, you know, you could really apply it to, you know, different stages or I can't come up with the word. I think his imagery in this was just wonderful. His audio was flawless as always. But I love how he just led right into this piece, that first stanza alone. Dancing the air, midst waltzing wings, circling in frantic, whirling ballets, dicing with death from a kiss of flame, clatting with fire and scorching pirouettes. I mean, the lead-in itself was fabulous. And without the image above, I think that, you know, you still pull it all together. And I think it was just incredible. I assume, I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg. You know, was it the image or was it the thought? But just really, really well done. Yeah, and I'm so lost here. He just continued to embellish this all the way through and just made it better and better. In my mind's eye, when we were reading it, and or he was reading it, and I was reading along, but just a great job and a wonderful audio as always. So thank you, Arcana, very much.
Excellent. Yes, the music for that was kind of haunting in a way, and almost had a spell of disaster. But I took this literally as the sun. Teasing enchantments from magical pyres always remain just beyond reach, where minds perceive an attractive embrace, remiss of an orbit around radiant repose. A faltering flight must spell disaster, a plummet and blazing balls of thunder, a final performance to nightly spectators who watch from shadows through unseen eyes. There's a kind of notice of that which is always there, but we take for granted without actually acknowledging the fact that without the sun, we have nothing, and there is attachment there of thought to that kindled demise. Kind of hits on the thought of someday that sun is going to go out. It's going to run itself into a brown dwarf or something else. So it hit that last stanza. As the taper flickers its last dying breath, extinguished from sight in a gasp of smoke, bidding farewell to glows from fading embers, till radiance calls out, from night once more. There's that note of, hey, we might bitch about the sun during the day because it's too damn hot, but you always, when nighttime comes around, you always look forward to that next risen note the next day because it offers something beyond the darkness. Nicely done, Arcana. Thank you. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, Rex, I have the next one for you, and this is by Peter Chapman, called 20 Steps.
All right. Peter Chapman. My legs betray me as they feebly try to hold back time. You grab my pinky. It gives me strength to move along this white linen torrent. Faceless people gaze with dentured smiles. Chopin and iPhone cameras. My eyes tingle and my sinuses swell. Today, a part of me is flying away. Ivy roses and chantilly orchards float on a field of baby's breath. Lucent syrup drapes flow like a sail, and the sea breeze nudges me forward. The city skyline hovers over the ocean bay. Its silver ripples curl to the terrace edge. They're like glittering ribbon hands, waving at me to follow them to the horizon. Gull sentinels surround topaz skies, ever so watchful, reminding me we are all part of the same circle. 18, 19, 20. I let go. Our fingers slide apart. We breathe the silent air. You take a step. I stay behind. My vision blurred, yet still I see your beauty and so proud to have watched you grow. End poem. All right, Pam.
This is just one of those rites that makes you go, aww. It's so sweet that we were brought into this scene of a father giving his daughter away in marriage. And you did a wonderful read of that. I really like how, you know, it's the title and the countdown of the 20 steps, because, you know, you've spent all these years, not all the years, at least a great majority of them, taking care of her or being there for her, even if you weren't no longer financially taking care of her. And then it's those final 20 steps to where, you know, you hand her off in marriage. I really like that he brings in the imagery of the ivory roses and chantilly orchids float on a field of baby's breath, lucent cirrus drapes flow like a sail, and the sea breeze nudges me forward. You really can just, you know, picture this being that out, almost like an outdoor beach-type wedding. You know, the ending really wraps up nicely. I let go, our fingers slide apart. We breathe the silent air. We take a step. I stay behind, my vision blurred. My vision blurred is such a wonderful way to describe that moment where your eyes fill up with tears. So a heartfelt and emotive rite, and very well done.
Nicely said, Pam. All right, Jean, how about you?
I thought this was just a beautiful, beautiful piece. You know, the image of the father walking his daughter down the aisle and releasing her to her her beloved, you know, to start a new life. I thought that was just beautifully expressed. Just a wonderful piece, Peter Chapman, and I'm glad you shared it with us tonight. I think it was just incredible. So, nice work. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jean. How about you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm really impressed by this too. It's a really nice write by Cedar. Yeah, I just recently went out to Colorado to see a nephew get married, and you know my own kids are probably not too far off from it themselves. And when I first was reading this and everything, that first stanza didn't get me there as far as knowing what this was about, and then, you know, as it hit into the second and then the third stanza, I started to kind of catch it and stuff. But, Yeah, it's really cool. Faceless people gaze with denture smiles. Chopin and iPhone cameras, which were going off left and right the whole time. Everybody's holding their cameras up during the wedding I just went to. My eyes tingle and my sinuses swell. And, you know, again, my brother, you could see how sad he was in some ways to, you know, even though it was his son, not his daughter, how sad he was to kind of know that, you know, an era kind of has ended and stuff. So today a part of me is flying away. Really cool, and I love the way he stair-stepped the 18, 19, 20 steps, you know, as a father does as he gives away his daughter and those kinds of things. And as it went to this last dance, I just kind of was, this is so cool. You know, I mean, it's sad, but it's kind of cool. So anyway, it's really good job, Cedar. You accomplished what you you made me feel what I'm sure you did.
Excellent. Great comment, Scott. Thank you. All right, Cedar, everybody else has hit on this hard, so I got only one thing to say. I hope you take this piece to somebody who does calligraphy and have it writ on some really, really good paper. Include what the best wedding photo you've got, frame it, and then hand it to your daughter. That's all that need be said right now, because it's that special, and she needs to have a piece of it. So congratulations. Wonderfully done. All right, Dean, we're back to you.
That wasn't fair, Lex, okay? I already teared up from the poem, and then you had to add to it. Thank you so much.
I couldn't think of anything else that you guys had already said that would make any sense. And the only real thing that could come to mind is going to a calligrapher and having this done special on some really, really fine paper.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, 100%. It's just I welled up in the poem, and then all of a sudden I start welling up again when you came up with the idea. I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah.
That
so,
is a really nice idea.
It is.
You know,
it's beautiful.
The poem, just so you all know, is actually fiction, but it's still a really nice idea. If that helps you well up, you less.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
Thank you for letting me wind out of our sails. Very much appreciated. Well, okay. Well, then for my next magic trick, I know. I'm going to pull a rabbit out of my head. Scott, I'm gonna put this piece up for you by Jack Thompson. So thank you.
All right. Sun Beaten by Jack Tomkovic. Smoking sun beats on my short-sleeved arms and shoulders and fists of heat. Child throwing tantrums, forearms twitching like fire ants burning. Shoulder pain switching the boulders thrown by giants while rivers of sweat drop and drip, leaving spots on shoes and pants. Sweat stings more than ants. Remember frost, fire, and ice? Today ice wins twice with a lemon slice, while flamethrower heat burns holes in my deck, turns asphalt liquid, blisters the neck, turns bags of ice into solid gold nuggets to soak the head. Wooden bowls of snow cream make children squeal with sugar joy. End poem.
Great read, Scott. Boy, that Scott kind of sounds like it from down here. A little heat in the Carolinas. And you know what? That thought with the today ice winds twice with a lemon slice. Yeah, that does speak to a little some iced tea on a hot day like this. I like it. Mm-hmm. And the term bags of ice and solid gold nuggets is soaking your head. Hey, when there's not a whole lot left, that bag of ice with the water left in it, still nice and cold. Stick it on the head. Perfect. And yes, of course, you know what? The kids really don't care about the heat, but you bowl them up with some ice cream, then cool them down to go off and make some more heat. So Nicely done there, Jack. Thank you. All right, Gene, how about you?
Wow, I mean, he really addressed the heat, I'll tell you. But what wonderful ideas for it to, you know, cooling it down. But this one here really got me. A child throwing tantrums, forearms twitching, like fire ants burning. You know, fire ants, boy, I'll tell you this. They are no joke, you know. And
hey,
you know,
when you're down here sweating like that and all that sweat dribbles into your eyes, yes, there is a powerful thing that comes with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not good with all that meat, but I get it. Ugh. But yeah, I think there were great stanzas here with wonderful, you know, ideas. He likes them ants, so he's got them down here again. You know, but fire and ice, today's ice wings twice with a lemon slice. You know, flamethrower heat, you know, turns asphalt liquid. Wow, thank God. Yeah, he's kind of nailed that heat wave kind of thing for sure. I don't know. I couldn't do it. But he solves it all with a bowl of snow cream. So why not, right? Great job. Great job, Jack. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Gene. And Pam? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great write. Definitely describes the heat and the reaction to the heat well. I did like Remember Frost, Fire and Ice, Today Ice Wins Twice with a Lemon Slice. And also the one after that, while flamethrower heat burns holes in my deck, turns asphalt liquid blisters the neck. You know, that's just really just, yeah, ouch. So excellent write. Very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Scott, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I love a lot of the images in it, and you definitely get the feel of the heat, you know, that I'm sure we're all across the country experiencing. But, you know, the shoulder pain, switching to boulders, thrown by giants, while rivers of sweat drop and drip, leaving spots on shoes and pants. Sweat stings more than ants. And like Rex was saying, yeah, you start sweating into your eyes, and you definitely start to feel that. And so anyways, you know, that created some very clear images for me and stuff. And just overall, a really great ride.
Thank you, everybody. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
Just for the record, I want to know, I put here, ice cream solves all, only second to cheesecake. So I just thought I'd say that with everybody. Yep. Cheesecake's not going to cool you off, but it sure as hell is good. See? I'm going to put this next one up, and I'm going to read it, and none of you are going to be surprised. So here we go. It's called In Trouble. The story of my life, number one. Number two, we all know the reason why you're laughing. In Trouble by Luke Alwyn. Moored child, hands move to chair. I have an invisible friend, Henrietta, sitting there. Ageless is my little painted world. End poem.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. And Pam, yeah, all 20 words.
Yeah. great read, Gene. I like this brevity on having an imaginary friend. I like the use of the word moored, you know, for a child that, you know, feels alone, feels like they don't have anyone to talk to. Other than their invisible friend. And I like that he chose the name Henrietta for the imaginary friend because it's such an old-fashioned name that it really fits well with the idea of ageless is my little painted world. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Scott, how about you?
Yeah, I agree. I feel, though, in a poem that's 20 words and stuff, that, Pam, you should only get to pick one word and talk about it.
Well, that would be if there was 19 other people besides me.
If you chose my word, bored. So I'm gonna skip to that last line, and I really love the, you know, the meaning within that last line, ageless is my little painted world. You know, I think he could go in a lot of different directions. You know, it's the ageless, I'm in trouble, you know, kids being kind of isolated for a moment to think about what they did, those kinds of things. So it's a really powerful 20 words. That's what I would say about this poem. So great job, Luke.
Thank you, Scott. All right, Jean, you got to read it.
I did, and I'm exhausted, just so you know. You know, Pam, I have to agree with you. I think the use of the word, the name Henrietta in there really suited it. It reminds me a little bit of a Rockwell piece, you know, not 100%, but close enough. And I think that kind of pulls that together a bit. But a very well done piece, and I thought it was really well expressed. And, you know, I'm with Scott, you know, that last line really, you know, summed it up. It's just a really good job there. Very nicely done, Luke. And thanks for sharing with us.
Nicely said. And I think you and Scott hit on it. Because the picture says it all, as well as the title,
yeah.
In Trouble. So I'm going with standing in the corner and having a chair handy. And the handy thought is the notion of that friend, because at that moment you are left to yourself and your own devices because you know you've done something wrong. And that last line is a nice note for the picture itself. It fits so well. Ages is my little painted world, because at that point in time, I'm not going any further in this spot right now for whatever I've done. All right, Jean. Rebecca, to you.
Okay. Next I'm going to put up is by Mr. M, and this is called, and this is a carryover from your contest, Rec, from last weekend. You didn't get it on the board in time, so here we go.
Oh,
and it's called
okay.
Out of the Stone Room by Mr. M. Let me hit that button. Sugar, honey, I see. Here I am. Okay, here we go.
This is my recital of As the Stone Rolls, a poem inspired by the song Painted Black. Since I was a child, I have been introduced to every shade of darkness, whether from within or merely observing. The baleful miasma was always attracted to this mangled husk. Woe found its home in the shadow of a soul. Tainted inklings meandered through the shell of a poet, and made their mark at the empty core. The forgotten remnant within the chest was to be the new home for my madness, and was painted black by the stubborn rebel therein. The false captain in a shoddy vessel doomed to drown in a sea of failure. The madman determined to make the most of my demise, figuring that there is some fun to be had before the great fall. Something akin to Pandora's box was unleashed, and a storm of unchecked chaos ran rampant in these walls. Cyclical hums resound, as the heart is merely a stone's roll from destruction. Echoing anguish seeps ebony, as the vessel was enveloped in the indulgent darkness. Fumes emanate from the thick, volatile cloud that are both obfuscating and intoxicating. As the fog rolls on, writhing and twisting throughout these chambers, the fool who made a heart his home was engulfed in the euphoric darkness. Whilst the walls crumbled amidst the cackling shadows, the fool stood firmly, simply humming to himself.
Great read, Mr. M. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Scott, why don't we start with you?
Well, I'm starting to become a Mr. M fan. You know, I'm going to have to look into some more of his stuff. I really love the way he reads his poems, and they all have sort of a dark feel to them. And so, yeah, I just... really like the way he writes it and everything else. That second stanza, woe found its home in the shadow of a soul. Tainted inklings meandered through the shell of a poet and made their mark at the empty core. And like I say, just the way the sound of him reading it, I don't make it sound like he does. So just love the feel of it. I love the way he ended it as well. Whilst the walls crumbled amidst the cackling shadows, the fool stood firmly, simply humming to himself, and then he does the humming at the end of it. I loved it. It's a really good job. I'm going to have to look into Mr. M a little.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. Gene? Oh, Gene.
Yes. Yes. I imagine Gene will be right back. I thought this was just a wonderful write. I was so glad. I had actually recommended this song to him for this show because, I thought it would be right up his alley. And I'm glad he was inspired to write. It was a wonderful SoundCloud as always. I really liked the flow of this. I liked the imagery. The title was a nice nod to the Rolling Stones. Something akin to Pandora's Box was unleashed. A storm of unchecked chaos ran rampant in these walls. I like how this all becomes, to me, this really speaks on the idea of someone who goes through a lifetime of darkness is observed that the darkness isn't just in their environment, but in themselves. And I also particularly am drawn to the imagery as the fog rolls on, writhing and twisting throughout those chambers. And I like that the house is a metaphor for their own mind. So excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. It bites hardly into the darkness with this one. The baleful miasma was always attracted to this mangled husk. And the forgotten remnant within the chest was to be the new home for my madness and was painted black by the stubborn rebel within. The false captain in a shoddy vessel doomed to drown in a sea of failure. And I thought Pandora's Box as well. And I like the thought, fumes emanate from a thick, volatile cloud that are both obfuscating and intoxicating. And the back end, a nice touch with a humming out painted black. To finish out, offering up that the fool standing firmly, just humming to himself. Yeah. Gene, how about you?
You know, I thought this was an excellent piece. I really like Robert's work a lot, but I thought this was an excellent take on the prompt. And it was just wonderful work as always, well written, well read, a super piece. So thank you, Robert, for sharing with us tonight. I'm glad you put it on the board. Okay. For my next one, I'm going to put a piece up by Pam Rice, Venus Fairy. I think she did that for me.
I did. I wrote this poem. Just for
it.
You, Dee.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be a limerick chain, but some of the meter is a little off, but close enough. So this is the Happiness Fairy, and it goes like this. I was out having drinks with a friend, talking of problems that won't end. Over gin and juice, our tongues were quite loose. Thank goodness for money to spend. Then right as we started the ninth round, a frog came hopping a bound. Her lips were bright pink, bulging eyes barely blinked, regally adjusting her crown. This amphibian loved to sing. Karaoke was her favorite thing. We made a notation of possible hallucination as this frog had a pair of pink wings. She belted tunes out like Janis Joplin, which had us twisting and hopping. She sang, my name's Moonlight Mary, the Happiness Fairy. Then glitter poured down without stopping. The small sparkles fell everywhere, in our eyes, in our nose, in our hair. in our corduroy pants like shimmering ants, so we huffed and we growled and we glared. Mary cried, "I don't think you understand. This is a very expensive brand. It costs a gold pile to give you a smile that comes upon my sparkle demands. But my friend and I were at our wits' end, our clothes covered with flakes of gems. So we grabbed some frog legs, opened two kegs, and stripped on down for round 10. End poem.
Okay. All right, Jean, since you're laughing, you can have a at the first lick.
I just want you to know, I was talking to Pam, and I said, "You're calling in tonight." She said, "I don't know, I'm going to try and find something for the board." I said, "Well, find me something sparkly." And this is what I got. It's awesome, Pam. Too funny. Too funny. I have to figure you must have had that image floating around somewhere, because there's no way you found that to go with this right. But beautiful. We had gin and juice. I like it. I like it. It's a lot of fun.
Thank
it
you.
Really is.
Thank you.
It's got a lot of just a wonderful sense of humor running through the whole thing. I'm sitting here and I was cracking up bits and pieces, but you know, I love this one. "As this frog had a pair of pink wings." Yeah. "He made a notation of possible hallucinations. As this frog had a pair of pink wings." I love it. You are crazy as hell. I swear to God. Awesome. Awesome sauce. I love this story behind it. Great job, honey.
Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Scott, how about you?
All right, first of all, I say, bartender, please cut her off. Once you do, take her keys. But yeah, I really liked the flow throughout it and the rhyming scheme that you used. I also love she belted tunes out like Janis Joplin, which had us twisting and hopping. She sang, "My name's Moonlight Mary, the happiness fairy." Then glitter poured down without stopping. So I just love the allusions to Janis Joplin and all that. You could just picture so much of it. I was smiling throughout. Had myself muted, or you probably would have heard me laugh a couple times too. So good job.
Oh, my God.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, I guess I got to go to the picture. Hello, cutie. I'm the happiness fairy. I've sprinkled happy dust on you. So now smile, damn it. This shit's expensive. Oh, that's not commanding enough. Got it included inside and tell you, smile, damn it. This shit's expensive. You know what? I'm doing you a good turn, and you ain't appreciating what I'm giving you.
Exactly.
The idea of having frog legs, open up the back end of this, two kegs. Damn. Nothing like a popping up two fresh kegs of 15 and a half gallons apiece. Yeah, that'll keep you rocking and rolling and whatever the hell you're getting into next. But Moonlight Mary, I had kind of hit me up the thought, but since you had Janis Sharp up there, Moonlight Mary must be Mary Poppins.
Well, I was just trying to fit something in about Bloody Marys, and you know, I don't know. It just came to me. It just sounded good, Moonlight Mary. You know.
There you go.
It sounded like the name of a happiness fairy.
Wow.
Maybe in the red light district, maybe in the red light district.
But thank you, Rex.
You did take her keys, right, Jean?
You got to watch that, Pam. She's rough.
Yeah, and that PBR, but have you pissing out your ass?
Right.
The PBR, the Pabst Blue Ribbon, that keg you've been drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. My. I don't know, man. You just dated yourself there, Rex.
Well, it's either that or the Bear Grylls.
I've been living a long time.
I just don't remember things like the red, white, and blue. And There was one thing, Maximus Super, way back in the day, 8% beer.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know nothing about what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. They were still around when you were drinking in your days.
Nah, I didn't drink beer. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay. Oh, you're a Zima girl, huh?
I'm not saying anything. But I don't know. We got 4 minutes left. I don't want to race through a light. I mean, I have one here by F Sharp, but I don't know. I don't know.
I
guess we can put it up. Well, I don't want you to race through it. You know, the writer might get upset if you do that. You know what I mean?
I want to see if I can post a picture that I.
Besides that, you're now down about two minutes and 40 seconds.
Yeah, it didn't let me post the picture. So I'll just go ahead and read it. Okay. Where's that? There
local
we go.
442.
All right. So anyways, I wrote this to Bobby's contest that I think will go off next weekend. Anyways, it was a picture of a bunch of valves is what the picture was of. So local 442. So many valves twisted and turned, union workers releasing steam piped down below from the suits above. Each valve singing its own tune, Bobby spinning one, Davy one, two. What a melody, valves like bar stools singing better than a jukebox too. Spinning another song, I grab a hold of the moment, whistling a tune, opening them up. Arms of flailing, an orchestra of elements conducting air and water too. Let the sound flow on through, singing the song of local 442.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. Pam.
Yeah, I thought this was an excellent write. Local 442, is that like that must be like a firehouse or a police house or something. I like the nostalgic feel of Bobby spinning one, Davy one, two, what a melody, valves like bar stools singing better than a jukebox two, spinning another song. You know, there's just something very nostalgic about bringing music into the imagery and into the poem itself. So very cool, very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Jean?
You know, Scott, I think this is a great piece. I think that the imagery in this definitely leans into a nostalgic feel. I was wishing that I could go over to the contest and look at the prompt, but the contest isn't listed on the
piece. I would suggest you do because it'll mean more to you.
Yeah, but if you entered it in the contest should be listed on the right-hand side, and I don't see it there. So that makes me curious.
I actually wrote two poems for this
contest.
Oh,
okay, gotcha. I'll check it out then. But it has a wonderful feel to it, and it definitely, has that nostalgic quality. It's wonderful. So I think that you did a great job, and I will go check that out, and then I'll leave a written comment.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. I like the fact that you went with 442 because that brings me to cars. Four barrel, four speed, dual exhaust. But the fact that this local 442 bites me at the thought this is a pipe fitting union because of all the language you got spinning in each valve, singing its own tune, opening them up, arms are filling, an orchestra of elements conducting air and water. So it's that idea of being below ground and fixing and tuning up the pipes that bring the water, bring the and release other things as well in and out of the huge buildings in a city because you got releasing steam pipe down below from the suits above. So there's that notion of walking and breathing underground, doing the grunt work while everybody else up top sits pretty and high and mighty, so to speak. But the thing is, the music that can be attained down there because a lot of those are almost hollow caverns, and you've got all these pipes running through it. So there's a multitude of the steam, the water, and everything else. And they all have their own little quirks when it comes to sound. Like the old buildings in the city, you turn on the heat in one of those valve registers on the floor, and you get this rumble of thought through the damn machine itself, even though it's not a machine, it's just a piece of iron fitting blazing out the heat. So this rings on those notes from old days when things used to be hard-pressed and done underground.
That's a lot of what that I tried to do there, what you just said.
Excellent. All right, Jean, to you for closing.
Okay, well, you know, that was it for tonight. Frank, I'm carrying your piece till next Friday because you weren't here, so I figured we may as well just read it when you are. Made more sense to me. And I have a couple other carryovers, but not many. Pam, I want to thank you for rescuing me tonight. You just had a heck of a week, haven't you? She's bobbing and weaving. Oh, my God. So, anyway, I'm glad you're here tonight to help me with all my other, you know, problems. And Rex, thank you as always for co-hosting me. Scott, I'm glad you called in and joined us. Feel free. We're here every Friday.
That was fun.
Always good to have you. And I looked up that picture.
Always enjoy being here.
Well, it's good to have you, and I appreciate it very much. And everybody, have a great weekend. Take care. Take care of yourselves. Be safe on the 4th of July. You know, no drinking and driving and all that stuff, because we want to have you back next Friday. We want to have you back on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We want you here every day. So you all be safe and take care of yourselves. Anyway, have a wonderful night. And Park Center Parking at 12:30. Enjoy. Thanks, guys.
Good night, gang.
Good night. Thanks.